No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Red Sox Hot Stove Edition with the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Had some developments across the league this week, some of them possible targets that Red Sox fans might have been interested in have gone elsewhere. We will talk about how we expect the market to evolve from here and maybe a couple of expectations. A couple of the big ones, Teoscar Hernandez, he signs with the Los Angeles Dodgers for just 1 year at $23 million. So 1 year at a high annual value. Shota Imanaga has signed with the Cubs for only a 4-year guarantee worth $13.25 million in each of those 4 years. There are two option years beyond that, but it is only a 4-year guarantee. So we'll be getting into those transactions, what we expect from here. We might touch on winter weekend in the final segment. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Micah Storms, Cody Paulson. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing all right, Terry. Micah, always a pleasure to be on the pod with you all again. We are in the Black Monday week of the NFL and the college football, carousel. And it's just kind of a reminder of how much of a dud that this offseason has been. You know, we get a dribble of news here or there. And, you know, I guess we got the Teoscar news and the Imanaga news. So that's kind of a busy week so far. But a lot to unpack for sure. You know, hopefully some better days ahead. But how are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Would like the Red Sox to make some moves. I always kind of consider January to usually be like the dog days of the winter in terms of baseball. But actually, for the most part, there's actually a decent amount of free agents available. Now, well, will they actually sign anytime soon? Nobody knows. But there are some names out there that I feel like usually aren't always out there at this time of the offseason. But it's just been, like you said, Cody, slow. This just points to the reason that they need signing periods. I've been screaming it all along. It would make the offseason so much more entertaining. Just make it happen, please.
We were talking about that yesterday in the war room, and I basically said, you know, this winter's been terrible for my mental health, but it's been great for the podcast because people have a reason to come back and see what the hell's going on and so on and so forth. And it's probably going to drag out for a little while, but let's go ahead and get into the pitching aspect of things. Now, I was not a Shota Imanaga guy at all, really. And even seeing at what little he signed for, I'm still kind of glad that we're not making a 4-year gamble on a guy who I believe is a complete wild card. But it is a little concerning that the Red Sox saw even that price tag a little too hefty, $13.25 million. And it's just, I'm kind of resigned to the idea we're going to get stuck with a Mike Lorenzen type guy. Some guy that's just not sexy and isn't going to give me a ton of confidence. I'm basically back where I was prior to the Giolito signing. When he got signed, I'm like, okay, we did something. That's an important piece. It was a guy I coveted. And now I'm just like, what are we doing again? It looks like they might not want to exceed $200 million, which is about where we're at right now. It's just, I don't know. But Micah, what are your thoughts?
I feel like it's a combo of two things. I think one, the reporters who were on these leaks and all these leads, they had him way overpriced because he signs for $53 million over 4 years. And many reporters, not just one, many suggested he would sign for 100 plus. So, I mean, that is a massive gap. And I think the other way you can kind of spin it is that teams valued Imanaga more like a number four starter. And that's kind of how he gets paid. So, you know, for me, I can see the frustration, the fact that, you know, he signs for $13.25 million AAV. You know, that should be an affordable price for a team like the Red Sox, and it doesn't appear like it was. But the Red Sox don't need number four caliber pitchers. They need front of the rotation arms. So signing Imanaga, to me, would have made very little sense, especially seeing kind of how the market valued him. I'm with you, Terry. I think he's a complete wild card, and probably the best years of his career are behind him. You know, maybe he finds something special in the middle of his – the second half of his career. Well, he wouldn't be the first Japanese pitcher to do that, but too big of a risk. I would much rather see with them being on a kind of a spending crunch – spend that money elsewhere, that $13.25 million elsewhere, if they actually will spend it, I don't know. But because if they would have signed Imanaga, that probably would have been maybe the last move they made in the offseason. Maybe they went out and got a bat too, but that would have definitely probably been the last pitching addition they would have made. And I would not have been okay with that going into the season.
Cody.
You know, in the wake of the Yamamoto signing, we're like, all right, you know, Imanaga's still out there. But I think as a whole, this podcast was like $5,100. That's really rich for a player on the wrong side of 30. You know, we kind of talked ourselves out of him. And for him to sign for $453, you know, with a chance to get to 80 after 2 years, you know, the contract deferrals and all the fancy language that they're putting into these days. As the resident, like, positivity guy on the podcast, Mike, I know that you trend a little bit more positive than the rest of them as well, so it's nice to have some balance here. I'm getting really tired of the Red Sox showing up to the table with their pockets turned out, like, I don't know, guys, do you guys need money? We don't have it. You know, this is an organization that has time and again spent right, and you know, you can say that they spent incorrectly, that's fine, but you know, they're asking their patrons to spend exorbitant amounts of money to go and experience a game at the ballpark, and they're going to continuously put on a subpar product. You know, it's we're being told, you know, we're seriously in the consideration for, or you know, we show strong interest in, or we remain in talks in with these free agents, and then as soon as they sign, the reports come out that the Red Sox weren't even close, or they were uncomfortable with, or unwilling to go to this number, or you know, go to past these years or whatever. And you know, one again, right, we remained strongly linked to Imanaga. He signs for $453 million and the Red Sox weren't in the ballgame. And so, you know, it's becoming increasingly difficult to see a path to a successful offseason. I don't want to link it to, you know, your team's down 17 with 4 minutes in the fourth quarter. You're like, all right, well, if you score quick here, get a three and out or a turnover, maybe an onside kick. You're doing all these mental gymnastics to figure out how your team can kind of get in the ball game. And it's exhausting, right? Because we keep going through these scenarios of like, oh, well, if we shed this payroll, if we trade, you know, Yoshida, if we trade Jansen, and then, you know, we flip for a Miami pitcher, or you know, make some trade out of nowhere, you know, pull something out from under the rug. And it's like, none of these moves are going to happen. There's no reason for us to believe that ownership is even paying attention to the Red Sox at this point, right? They don't show up to winter weekend, they make these flippant comments in the media, and then they write off and do whatever they want to do with their time. It's getting very, very old. And it's really unfortunate. 4 for 53 for a fourth. I mean, okay, it's fine. You get him 30 to 34, right? Medical has have, you know, extended guys' careers long enough to where that's something that we absolutely should be in the mix for. And, you know, Terry and I have talked about this. Mike, I don't know if you and I have had this specific conversation, but we could also use a number four starter. We don't have five pitchers right now that we're confident that can give us 20 starts, right? So we're not above signing a number four starter at this point, right? You know, if you're looking at a good rotation that was missing a Chris Sale or a David Price to push us over the edge to, you know, make a World Series run, I absolutely understand saying, hey, you know, maybe we don't need Imanaga at this point, but we need pitchers. Like, we were doing a bullpen run through 2 out of the 5 days of the rotation. Like, we are at this point a poverty franchise, not only in the product that we're putting on the field, the way that we're approaching free agents, but the way that we're also approaching the offseason. And it's very frustrating as somebody who likes to kind of remain positive. I think I had the highest win projected total out of the group last year. I was always, you know, trying to put lipstick on a pig, and it's just, it's not looking that way.
It's pretty ominous. I mean, we're back to the Red Sox being fixated on a certain price for a certain number of years when a big market team shouldn't be dwelling on something so concrete. I just don't get it. And you look at what's left. I mean, if you're not getting Imanaga for $50 million, you're not pursuing Jordan Montgomery. I mean, that's a pipe dream at this point. And I think Montgomery is going to sign closer to $100 million. He's not getting the $150 or higher, you know, for 6 or 7 years that some of the projections have, you know, been posted. And I think it's going to be for much less than that. And even so, I still don't think the Red Sox are going to be competitive with him. Cody?
I mean, Terry, you mentioned it. We're currently at 200, and the only constant to the reports is we need to shed payroll to, you know, aggressively pursue the free agents. So that means they want to go down farther before they even kind of work their way back up, let alone get anywhere close to the first level of the luxury tax, right? We're not asking, hey, we need to, you know, blow the whole budget, back the whole thing up, you know, go way over. We're just saying, hey, act like you care. Mike, I believe you have something you wanted to add.
What I don't understand is, like, if they want to truly stay at 225 and they're worried about that and they're like, we have to shed payroll before we add, I don't understand why they have to operate that way. Like, it is January 10th. You could go out and sign Jordan Montgomery, and then you could even add a bat like Soler, and then you can trade Kenley Jansen in three weeks. Like, you don't have to subtract before you add. You can add and then subtract if you're really worried about dollar amounts. I mean, they shouldn't be worried about dollar amounts, but they are. But they don't have to operate this way. It's so stupid.
I don't know if you guys saw the report. You know, you saying Kenley kind of made me think about it. Do you see that interview with Andrew Bailey?
I haven't yet.
He essentially said that there doesn't need to be a bona fide closer to the bullpen. So they might be stoking the flames of potentially a Kenley move or moving him off of that role. But that's, you know, food for thought for a future episode. We'll see what comes up with it.
It should not be hard at all to trade Kenley Jansen. He's a great alternative to Josh Hader, who's going to get at least 4 to upwards of maybe 6 years, depending. And I say depending because I don't hear his name get kicked around hardly at all. So it should be pretty easy to trade a guy like Jansen, but what are we going to do with it? Are we going to use that money to go perhaps get some of these guys that we don't expect to be competitive with? I mean, I don't know. And you did touch on it a little bit, Cody. I mean, the Red Sox were in the room in the Imanaga negotiations. What were they hoping to get him for? If he signed for 53, were they hoping, for 30 million, for 40 million, something that was not even remotely realistic. I mean, it's like they're, it's like they have a designated troll to someone in the front office, like in Moneyball. Peter Brand's character, played by Jonah Hill, he was a nobody in the Cleveland Indians front office, Indians at the time. Okay. And obviously he was the assistant GM when he, you know, joined Brad Pitt in Oakland. So they might have some nobody intern just getting in touch with these teams saying, oh, we're interested. Yeah. Keep us posted. And that's how we're getting reports that the Red Sox are interested, when they're never going to seriously make an offer. Like, what's the pitch if you're not close to being competitive? Now, I'm being a little bit facetious with that scenario, but it just doesn't make sense that they're interested in all these guys, and you're not even hearing that they're the runner-up. You're not hearing that they were aggressive, you know, with that particular free agent. You're not hearing any of that right now. So I just, the one glaring weakness of the last 4 or 5 years has been the rotation, and it's just hard to imagine they're going to do something about it. Even having the means to shed more payroll to do it, I just don't trust that they're going to do it. And it sounds like somebody would be willing to take on Yoshida. You know, you just might not be getting great trade packages back if you're expecting the other team to take all the money. And I'd be fine with that if I knew for sure they were gonna put that money to good use. That would be fine for me. But it's just gotten to be ridiculous.
And like, if they end up trading Jansen and then say they actually go out and get Montgomery, like, unless Jansen brings back a young, controllable starter, like, I saw there was a trade out there, a trade that a fan made, but it was like Jansen to the Dodgers and Gavin Stone comes back to the Red Sox. And it's like, he's a young controllable starter. I can get behind that idea, but like, if they don't bring a big league piece back and they're still able to go out and get Jordan Montgomery, Red Sox fans should still be angry about that. Like, there's no reason to shed Kenley Jansen unless you're bringing back a big league piece. And you can't convince the fans that you're trying to compete when you trade your closer. And I know Jansen wasn't this, you know, he wasn't the old Jansen, you know, where he's a lockdown, but he was pretty good last year for the most part. And he had 30 plus saves. And there's no one on the Red Sox that has a history of closing games out. So if you're going to make a case for Chris Martin, who I probably think could close, he hasn't done it in his career. Garrett Whitlock hasn't done it in his career. Tanner Houck hasn't closed over the course of a season. So if you're going to convince me that the Red Sox are really going to win next year, trading Kenley Jansen for anything less than a big league caliber player doesn't do it. And there's no argument you can make that it will change my mind on that.
Another player off the board, Teoscar Hernandez, not a guy I wanted. I forget where you guys stand. I know he was somewhat popular on the crew. I know Jason and Charlie were both very favorable to signing him. I'm a much bigger Jorge Soler guy. Draws more walks, strikes out a lot less. I just think he profiles a little bit better. He's a righty, and that overlay that people take off of, I think it's Baseball Savant, and you put his hits last year at Fenway Park, I mean, he's just crushing it. Like, you're looking at 38 to 40 home runs minimum, if not, you know, mid-40s, and I just think that would be an explosive addition to the lineup. I mean, you go Devers in the two-hole, then Soler third, Casas fourth. I mean, wow. That's a lot of power. It's a lot of walks. I mean, for as bad as Casas was in those first 2 months, he was drawing walks. So it's just a perfect fit and, quite frankly, a no-brainer. Mikey, you said you saw reports that the Red Sox are out of it. There's a Heyman report saying that the Blue Jays or the Red Sox are more likely, take it for what it's worth because it's Heyman, but that would be a great move for the Red Sox. And going back to Hernandez, $23.5 million for a year, and they've deferred $8.5 million of that over 8 or 9 years into the next decade. So they're deferring 1 year contracts. And I very sarcastically said on Facebook, the Dodgers have become the psychotic girlfriend that does drugs and maxes out your credit cards on you, you know, behind your back, because it's just very reckless at this point, and they need to push money out. I just, in 2027 or 2028, they're going to have to pursue a big time free agent, and they've already got money deferred for Mookie, Shohei, and a little bit for Hernandez, but it's just kind of nuts what's going on out there. Micah.
If you had to guess the total dollar amount of deferred money for Mookie, Ohtani, Freeman, and Hernandez, what would you put the number at, unless you saw it?
I saw it, so I'll abstain.
I did see something. I don't know if it was the same thing. So Shohei's getting, what, 680 deferred. Mookie probably has about 100 or so deferred. It must be, it's close to a billion. It's 800 million to a billion.
It's $865 million.
Yeah.
Insane. Go ahead, Cody.
Let's just round it up to a billion.
I mean, I think they've committed over $1 billion worth of money in this offseason alone between, you know, the Teoscar, the Yamamoto, and the Ohtani signings. You know, I mean, Hernandez would have been exciting. Heck, anybody, Mike Sweeney, Matt Stairs, one of them would be exciting at this point, right? Like, you know, the Baseball Savant, the overlay pages are always so nice, right? They're like, oh, look what this player would do at Fenway. And seemingly anybody and everybody that's right-handed would crush. You know, Hernandez being a right-handed power bat would be nice. You know, I think some sort of Soler-Lizardo trade would, you know, pry away some of those prize prospects, which, you know, I think at this point, any of us would be happy to do at this point. You know, I don't want to rinse and repeat what we were saying about Imanaga, but 1 year, $23.5 million for a power bat that's right-handed, which you desperately need. I mean, these are no-brainer moves, right? Like, these aren't like we got out-savvied or we got, you know, overextended. They offered him a 7-year deal and all this are like, well, I don't want to offer him 7. You know, like, you can't logic your way out of any of these deals that these other teams are making for these players that would be great fits for the team here in Boston. And that's when it's becoming increasingly frustrating, right? You know, like, you look at the Bogart deal from last year, right? I know a lot of people were upset about that, but nobody wanted to pay him for 12 years, right? Or, you know, Judge for however many, we were never going to get Judge, but like, oft injured player into his late 30s, like, you know, the Ohtani deal, you could, you know, do the mental gymnastics around. And, you know, even the Yamamoto deal, I guess, like, if you really wanted to, you could kind of get upset with it or be glad that that wasn't on your books. But I mean, that was still a pretty good one, if we're being honest. These last two deals, I mean, these are no-brainers, right? You put Imanaga in your back pocket, you combo that with Hernandez and maybe one other piece, and the offseason's starting to look a lot better. And it's not at any of these crippling contracts that are going to make you, you know, trade off a good MLB-ready player in a couple of years to the Dodgers when we inevitably have, you know, that time is a flat circle moment. And so even if he is a guy that strikes out a lot, you know, we've dealt with that before. That hasn't been a problem. You can cover him with players that walk as well. It's just a bummer is really what it's coming down to.
Go ahead, Micah.
I think what bothers me the most, and it kind of touches off the Imanaga, like, if you're in the room, what are you offering Imanaga? If you know, like, because it was reported that they were really interested in Hernandez and that he was a top target this offseason. If you know that 1 and 23.5 are on the table, it doesn't matter if it's deferred, like, you still have to beat that number, and you are stuck on 2 and 28. Like, you shouldn't even be in the bidding for him, because that's not even a comparable offer. You know what I mean? Like, you're giving him $5 more million for an extra year of service. He can get way more of that, especially if he kills it in LA, like he probably will, because everybody kills it in LA. Like, it just shows that they really don't understand the market when it comes to working in free agency. Like, you're not going to be able to sit, okay, 2-28, that's our number. If you really want a free agent, you're probably going to have to go over that number. And like 3-45 or 3-50, 4-60, like that's probably what you would have given Hernandez to beat that 1-23-year deal, because Hernandez can sign that deal. He can kill it in LA and he can be a free agent next year. He could have a massive year and probably get a 4 or 5 year deal if he really wants it. But in order to persuade him not to go that route, you had to offer him something significant. 2-28 is a joke. And I would have much rather the Red Sox say, well, we know that the Dodgers are offering 1-23. We're not even in because we can't match that. I'd rather hear them say that than offer 2-28. That's just embarrassing.
I think we possibly could have got it done at like 2 years, $40 million. I think the Red Sox, and you could put an opt out in there too after the first year. I don't think the Red Sox would have had a problem with that if they were willing to. They just weren't willing to go anywhere near even $20 million for 1 year is the problem. And was the offer 2 years, 28? Okay, so that is what it was.
That was the report. Yeah, that was the report. I mean, take the report for whatever it is, because there's been so many reports this offseason that have been nowhere near what the actual numbers were. So okay. I guess take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. That's about what Jorge Soler would be worth. It might be $30 million over 2 years, maybe 32. I can't see it getting too far north of that. And there's not a ton of teams in on him. He doesn't have the interest that Hernandez had for some reason. So I'm still kind of clinging to hope that we'll get him, but that rotation is still, it still looks pretty ominous to me. If they don't resolve that, I don't care. I mean, when in World Series history were you completely, an offensive team, with little pitching? It's just maybe the Kansas City Royals. They had a great bullpen that year, though. But it's just not a thing. You have to have a good rotation. So winter weekend is about to start. Red Sox ownership will not be there. There will be no town hall. We've already talked about this in previous shows, but that kind of is at the forefront now, especially where they seem to be in limbo here in terms of making deals or not. It seems like they've already whiffed on the offseason. I think they blew it, and by blowing it, kind of like what Cody said, they just had a bad read on the market, on what they thought they could do, didn't have a feel for it. And that's probably why we're in the situation we're in. So winter weekend is happening. I think, is it like the MGM Grand in Springfield? It's definitely in Springfield, Massachusetts. I forget what the name of the event center is, but so no town hall meeting. And that's notable because last year it was a mob scene with Bloom trying to justify everything that he had done and then ends up getting fired, a handful of months later. And they're replacing that part of the event with Jonathan Papelbon doing like almost like a late night show, just interviewing people and whatnot. And that sounds cool. I think that will be entertaining, but the elephant in the room is ownership. And I'm kind of hoping that this ends up being a shit show in some regard. That's what I want to hear starting tomorrow night, that the fans are nuts and, wanting to riot in a way, not literally, but, figuratively. But Micah, thoughts on winter weekend?
It's disappointing, and I think it just shows that the ownership group does not have a feel for the fan base, because they know how the fans feel. There's no doubt about it, because that's why they're not there. They know that if they were to go, that they would get crushed. like they did last year, probably would be even worse. So they know how the fans feel, but they don't have a feel for what they need to do to try to fix that, because they're not going and they've canceled this. Because what they should be doing is telling Red Sox Nation what the plan is moving forward. And it should come not from Sam Kennedy. Nobody gives a damn what that guy thinks. It should come right from John Henry, because we haven't heard from him in, I don't even know the last time we've really heard him talk about the Red Sox. I don't know, but it's been a while. And I think if John Henry went out and he said, I understand frustration right now. We did not have the offseason we wanted. We have cut payroll. We have a lot of flexibility. And next offseason, we are going all in. If he said something like that, now fans may not believe it, but at least you can go off of, from John Henry, this is what he said. Because this whole time it's been, well, this is what ownership is saying, but John Henry isn't actually saying it. Because in the past, John Henry has said things and it's mattered. But now he isn't saying anything and he has his puppets saying things and we don't know what's real. And it's honestly what they say is the opposite of what's happening. So it's really confusing. But it's super disappointing, and it's a poor effort on their part that shows, and it really allows the fan base, it gives more fuel to the fire for them to just question the commitment of ownership. And that's just the opposite of what they should be doing. It's a bummer, because I will be honest, I wanted to go, but I can't justify paying, I think it was like $95 or something like that for a ticket. I can't justify driving 4 hours, paying $95 for a ticket, and then the organization has shown zero desire to win. I can't justify that. And I wanted to go, but it's frustrating. And it really sucks for the players, because the players, this is their career. They want to win, and they're going to have to hear fans complain, and they have nothing to do with it. They want to win, but the ownership is not giving them the tools they need to win. And it's a shame, but this is where we're at. And, I think it was telling, if you follow Jared Carrabas on Twitter, he himself even kind of called it, you know, kind of like it is. And he said it's justified for Red Sox fans to feel frustrated and angry. And usually he doesn't do those types of things on social media. Usually he's pretty pro-Red Sox. But there's really no justification to be pro-Red Sox. You sound like you're getting paid under the table, you know, $100 by John Henry to talk nice about the Red Sox if you are pro Red Sox right now, because there just is really nothing to be excited about.
Cody.
I mean, it's an organization run by a bunch of cowards, whether it be in negotiations or, you know, facing the music when you behave poorly and you don't want to deal with the ramifications of your actions. Winter weekend, as it's constructed, should be a really, really exciting time, right? You know, Micah, you mentioned it. It's a four-hour drive. You get to meet some players, see some other fans, talk shop, you know, kind of give you something to hold on to as you get through, you know, kind of the slog of winter, something to look forward to as, you know, we're talking about truck day and spring training, you know, something to kind of bide that, you know, middle point. But, you know, it's really devolved the last couple of years as you know, ownership and the front office have not given us much to be excited about. And, you know, to run Papelbon out there as kind of a puppeteer to abate some of the fans, I think is also a unique strategy. He's also starting to get a little radical with some of his takes out there. He's kind of going scorched earth on, you know, pretty much any and everybody. So I'll be interested to kind of see the trajectory that he takes. You know, he lambasted JD Drew there today, which I thought was unique. But, you know, the idea of winter weekend was, I think, pure in conception, right? You know, an idea for all of us to get together and to be happy. And, you know, you sleep in the bed that you make, or, you know, whatever, like you reap what you sow. And at this point in time, that's kind of what they're looking at. Right. And last year they faced the music. They, you know, they took it on the chin, for lack of better terms. And I think the only way that they're really going to know you know, how we feel as an organization or as a fan base is either we don't show up at all, right? And there's no revenue, there's no ticket sales, and there's no impression, or, you know, we go there and we boo loudly and everybody gets a negative reaction. And so last year we did the latter. We went there, we booed loudly. You know, we kind of stuck it to them and nothing really changed. So at this point in time, you got to stop going, right? Like, you got to stop giving your hard earned dollars to this organization, because, I mean, for why? Where is it going? What's it doing for you? It's not doing anything but causing us consternation and pain and frustration and headache and whatnot. But, you know, it's a real bummer. And I've always been in Florida and or Louisiana or Texas. So winter weekend hasn't really been something that I could go and partake in. And it's always been a cool opportunity that I would love to do sometime. But, you know, maybe another offseason.
Another thing that's kind of interesting, Rafi Devers, basically the face of the Red Sox organization, not scheduled to appear even at winter weekend himself. So, and apparently Lucas Giolito as well, not scheduled to be there. So the optics of the event are looking bad. And I just hope, if we are bad, I want to see an empty stadium this year. I want to see terrible optics with that, you know, throughout the year, just empty seats everywhere, because that's our way of sticking it to ownership. You know, you're not going to invest in the team. Well, guess what? We're not either. And I hope turnout is low at winter weekend even. It's, man, this is not the winter I thought we were going to have. On that September day when Bloom got fired, I thought, man, we're back. We are so back, and we're gonna be that big market team again. And we're the furthest thing from that. And nobody wanted to come here. And we're kind of seeing why, you know. They didn't like the direction we were going, and why waste 3 or 4 years of your career in Boston just to get fired? You know, it's been frustrating. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, they're either going to have to pivot and do something they previously said they're not willing to do, or something unforeseen is going to have to happen here. I don't know what that would be, but you guys have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I probably not a very popular take with this crew, but I think one thing you have to tip your cap to Heim Bloom is he sat up there and he took it. He at least had the guts. And it was reported that he truly felt that he owed it to the fan base to at least explain his idea of the direction of the team last offseason, and he owed it to answer questions that he at least tried to answer. I mean, they were poorly answered questions, but he at least sat up there and took the boos. And this offseason, no one's going to go up there and have the guts to stand up there and at least take it. And I have to say, I definitely soured on Bloom over the last couple months of his tenure with Boston, but even now I can respect the fact that he at least was willing to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this offseason has just started to look better and better for Bloom as each kind of day goes by, and, you know, each of that inactivity. And Micah, that's a great point. I mean, he never dodged a single media appearance, never dodged an interview, would go on podcasts, would answer questions, would, like you said, take it on the chin. And, you know, he's already back in baseball in, you know, a front office with the Cardinals, I believe. It'll be really interesting if we ever get any sort of like clarity on what this 5-6 hopefully year period has been for the Red Sox, right? You know, what is really going on here? If we emerge from it, or if this is just, you know, a transition into a deeper time. But you're absolutely right. Bloom took it on the chin repeatedly, countlessly, was just kind of like the sacrificial puppet for, you know, the front office and for ownership.
Actually, I got a couple of things. One I meant to mention in my notes here. 10 years ago, John Henry was an outspoken owner with this team, and tons of quotes in the media. the one thing I'll always remember from him is one day, it was in the summer of 2012. That was the Bobby Valentine year. Not a whole lot going on by that point of the year. Some report came out that the Red Sox might be looking to sell the team. They might, you know, because they had a ton of bad press. The beer and chicken year was the previous year, and now the Bobby Valentine year was a, you know, was a clown show. And there was a bogus report out there that the Red Sox might be looking at selling here. And John Henry himself, within minutes of that, within like 30 minutes of that, was on WEEI via the phone to immediately dispel any of those rumors. And it was quick. And it was the owner of the Red Sox, you know, confirming this, that, you know, it's just a bad rumor, it's not true. And while he was there, they fielded all kinds of questions. They said, well, now that you're here, could we ask you some other questions? They asked him what the status of Bobby Valentine was, and he was very political about it, very deflective, didn't want to answer it. You know, talked about some other stuff. The salary dump that year, the Beckett, Crawford, Gonzalez thing to the Dodgers hadn't happened yet by that point, but this is a different John Henry. I meant to mention that a minute ago. And the other thing we're not seeing here, I don't know if you guys follow Tom Caron at all, but he's been critical. He's been like, oh, I'm glad they signed Giolito, but we're a long ways out, you know? And when Papelbon was on the show, and you can, if any of you didn't hear that in the audience, you can go dig down into our archives, you know, 15, 20 shows or so. We had him on in, I think it was October, November, somewhere around there. And, you know, he was kind of crapping on Bloom for the most part, but he essentially alluded to, you know, it was kind of a relief, you know, from Nesson that we were moving on. And if you remember the day he got fired, Dave O'Brien mentioned it two or three times an inning. Like it was like the savior, like, thank goodness we're going to pivot now. We're going to be better. Our ratings are going to go up. So I don't know if the Red Sox can rein in Nesson. They own Nesson, so you'd think they probably could, but they're not going to really flip the narrative at all. The beat writers are going to destroy them for another season if they don't get this right. So that's refreshing. That's refreshing. And we talked about before coming on, you know, we're not the only podcast in town anymore that's going hardcore accountability on this team. We're the OGs. We're the OGs as far as that goes. But you know, we're not the only ones anymore. So it's going to be extremely tough for them to flip that narrative. And like I said, the best way to counter their bad moves is to not go. Don't buy tickets. Micah.
If the Red Sox really don't do anything significant in terms of any more additions, but they were to extend Tristan Casas or Brian Bello, does that change the narrative at all for you? Or are you still very firm, I'm sour right now on where things are?
It's highly necessary that they do that, but I'd still be pissed.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. What about you, Cody?
Sorry to cut you off there. I would say they'd have to do both, and it would at least show us what the plan is, right? Because then it'd be like, all right, look, we're investing in homegrown guys. We're investing in our own talent. You know, we're making it appealing by saying, hey, if you come here, you produce, or, you know, if we draft you and you produce, we're going to invest in you, which is not something that they've done in years past. If they did both, I would definitely be more readily willing to be reeled back in.
That's fair enough. I just, like, I'm almost getting to the point where, like, if they don't extend Casas in the next year or two, with this organization, it's too late. Like, and that's absurd because, like, if he still is like just entering arbitration, you should easily be able to extend him and still save some dollars. But like Tristan Casas, if I think he becomes what I think many believe he's going to become, he's going to cost $150+ million. He might even cost that now if you give him an 8-year deal or a 9-year deal. But if you wait a year or two, it only goes up if he has a breakout year in 2024. And if they wait a year or two, I feel like we could see the Devers situation all over again, where you're like entering his final year and we're wondering, are they going to sign him? Are they going to trade him? What are they going to do? And it's like, I think if they sign Casas to an extension, it would at least say he is definitely a building block moving forward. I mean, he is anyways, but it's like we are definitely building around him and Devers for the next decade plus. I feel like we need something like that. Even if they go out and sign a pitcher, we need something like that to know that we are committed to the guys that we're developing, because that's the whole point of sucking, is you at least get good draft picks, build the farm, and hopefully have young, controllable players, and you have a good core.
If you have the year, if Casas has the year that we desperately need him to have, which would be a big year, and you didn't extend him, you might have blown it. You might have blown it, because he's only got one more year after this pre-arbitration. And then at that point, it doesn't matter. He's going to be making probably $4 million, then $8 million, then $15 to $20 million if he's the player we think he's going to be. So if he's getting that money anyway, why sign early at that point? He's going to go the Mookie Betts route, and he should. And he should. So I don't think you necessarily have to get Bayo done this year, but you definitely have to get Casas done, I think. And I think he's already at 150. I really do. And so, I mean, it would have to be at least, what, 7 years? I'm bad at math.
I think it would have to be more than that, because he still has 5 years of team control. You would want him to have more. Like, you wouldn't want to be like giving him way more money than he actually would for just two additional years. Like, it would have to be like a 7-year deal with two team options or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the example I actually gave last fall was 8 years with two team options, if I'm not mistaken. The team option years would be at big money, probably $30 million apiece. But yeah, so we'll see. But that's an interesting conversation, and one that I think we'll be having. And if they could do it in season two, I guess, like, they could sign him this summer to an extension even. So I don't know that there has to be a hard deadline, you know, before opening day, but that's a situation that can easily be botched. I mean, we're hoping he's going to be a cornerstone this year, you know, a bona fide heart of the order guy. And if you suddenly let him get the leverage, ouch, you know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be that same sad movie. And I don't think in the next handful of years they're going to cave at the last minute like they did with Devers and give him the deal. You know, I just don't. How many contracts like that size can you have, really? Basically just one, I think.
Well, that's why you have to do it now.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you could probably do it in the next 12 months and be okay. But if you wait longer than that, you're not really getting a friendly discount like the contracts that the Braves have signed over the years. You're not getting those. So, I mean, I really think it's right now. Go ahead, Cody.
I was just going to reference the Braves, right? Like, it'd be one thing if it was unprecedented or nobody else was doing it in the league, but you literally see the blueprint of the benefit of doing that, right? Like, they locked up Acuna, they locked up Albies. I mean, granted, you know, to minimum wage deals, but they're in the World Series and they have the flexibility to go out and get free agents. Like, you can do both if you sign, you know, these elite level players or, you know, above average or at the very least major league players to major league, I guess, friendly deals. It's frustrating.
And I think I'm at the point where it's like, show me you believe in a player, because they've talked about how much they believed in Tristan Casas, and they did show it by keeping him up in the big leagues. But it's like, show me you are committed to building around him, because it really should be Casas and Devers are the two pillars of this offense moving forward. There's no reason. And I want to see that. And I want to see that commitment from ownership. And I don't think I would be so concerned if we didn't experience Mookie, if we didn't experience John Lester before that, and we didn't experience Xander Bogaerts. Like, there's been way too many deals that have gone sour, and we see how they think they know the market in free agency and they have no clue. And it concerns me, because you can't lowball him and then be like, oh, well, now we want to pay you the proper amount. You're going to end up overpaying. And it's like, you could get Tristan Casas for probably like $15 to $17 million per year. And if you believe he is going to be the guy you think he's going to be, that is a massive steal.
Yeah, I just, as you were giving your take, I was just writing out scenarios numbers wise. So if you gave him an 8-year deal at $15 million per, that would be $120 million. And then you could add 2 option years on. I would say, I guess if they're $15 million, you know, for the first 8, you know, the option years would probably be worth 20 apiece. So that would be 160 over 10 years, conceivably. But it could go as high as 20 per year. So that would be 8 at 160. And then the 2 option years probably would be at about $30 million. That gets you to 220 over 10 years. But that is still a steal compared to what you're seeing with some of these big bats. You know, wait till we see what we've already seen what Shohei would get. And, you know, if he isn't a pitcher, he's getting 350 then, right? You know, half of the 700. You know, Mookie, Tatis, Harper, Manny Machado the second time around. Well, actually, both times was the first time he was at 300 in his initial deal with the Padres, and then I think the second one is even north of that. But so you can get Casas for 160 to 180 in a decade. You know, that's a no-brainer. But in, you know, 3 or 4 years, we're going to be saying the same thing about possibly Meyer or Anthony. So, you know, it's an endless cycle, and in the end, we won't sign them all, I don't think. But
it's possible. It's more possible. I don't even know if that's a phrase. But it's you have a better chance of doing that if you do it early, like the Braves have. They could never have kept Acuna, Albies, Riley, signed Olsen. They could have never gotten all those guys unless they did it early. And if you believe in the players, do it now. That's what I'm saying. Do it now, so that way you can, instead of paying 220 for Casas, you pay 160. That's $60 million you saved over the course of the deal. Go put that towards the next extension. The Red Sox need to operate like this if they truly don't want to act like a big market and if they want to win.
I'm just seeing what Austin Riley got real quick. 10 years, 212. How did he do last year? I know he wasn't as good as the previous year.
But He's a stud.
Okay. I could be wrong then. Let's see. Where's his average? 281 last year with a 345 on base, 37 home runs. All right, I take it back. He was excellent last year. For some reason, I thought he regressed just slightly, but it's not something, you know, that would have been too concerning. So I think that's the comp for Casas. You know, if they wait one more year beyond this, like I think is more likely. I think that's where they're trending. But you look at, you know, the fact that they're not going high in payroll, like we need to add more than what we have. So that just makes it seem unlikely this year that they would get that done. But all right, well, let's wrap on that a Tristan Casas extension deep dive was not on the docket, but we went there. And, you know, that's the conversation you're supposed to be having at this point in the winter, because all the signings have happened, but they haven't. So, you know, we've been talking largely about that, but probably, well, we could be back if things develop, you know, with our luck, a Friday signing could happen. So who knows? That's been the trend this winter, but barring nothing, we'll be back on Sunday night to discuss more news and rumors. So everyone have a good weekend. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.